This is Fresh Air. I'm Cherry Gross. Mark Parent has had to take children away from their parents for the Children's Protection. That was part of his job during the 4 years he was a caseworker at New York City's Emergency Children's Services. When it was started in the 80s, it was the only agency that operated at night, investigating allegations of child abuse and removing imperiled children from their homes. Caseworkers like Parent were asked to follow up on tips that were phoned in by neighbors, psychiatrists, friends, and family of victims. Parent's new memoir, Turning Stones, is about what he describes as his trip through the darkest basement of human behavior, where parents become perpetrators, mutilating and sometimes killing their own children. I asked him how he'd announce himself when he showed up at the door to investigate alleged abuse.
Well, you end up being a bomb diffuser. That's what I felt like after a while, because, you know, the saying that you get more with sugar than you do vinegar is really true. And I'd knock on the door and tell people where I was from, and we had a flimsy plastic card that we would hold up to show them that we were for real, which didn't always work. But once they saw that we knew the names of all their family and the ages and their previous addresses, they figured that we were for real. And I'd start out by just telling them what the allegations on the report say and let someone know that this is what somebody said about you, and we're here to hear your side of it. And even if none of this is true, isn't it a good thing that we're here checking it out, because we don't know that it's not true. And for people that had something to hide, they would stay angry, and the people that actually were reported falsely, I could get them to understand that isn't it a good thing that we came out in the middle of the night within hours of getting this report. And they'd say, yeah, sure.
So what criteria were you supposed to use to decide whether a child was in jeopardy?
It was simple. When we went in the middle of the night, we would look in the situation. If the child was in trouble, we would take them. If the child was safe, we would leave them. If we weren't sure, we would take them.
Oh, God, that must be so hard. I mean, you walk in there, you're strangers, you don't know these people. You get to spend, what, a few minutes with them to evaluate? How can you feel confident in your judgment?
We left situations that were not ideal to be followed up by daytime officers who would take their time and analyze the family and try to figure out what sort of help they needed. But it was simple to see a child that was in terrible risk of harm. If you're in the bedroom sitting on the bed of a child who's covered with cigarette burns, it's a simple thing. I saw kids like that. We took those kids and had parents arrested.
There's a case that you describe that where a baby died and you felt that you had made the wrong call and felt very guilty for a long time. Tell us a little bit about what happened there. Let me say that this was a case where you were told that there was a mother with five kids and that the kids were running around wild and unclothed and undernourished, and you went to investigate.
Right. This was at the end of a long night of visiting other cases, and towards the end of my time with the agency, and went up into a home where there was minimal furniture, a very bad building. Every other apartment was abandoned and padlocked shut. The type of a building that felt ridiculous to go and check on the safety of one child when it seemed like everyone in the building was unsafe. Went into the mother's apartment, and she was doing her best with the resources that were available to her. She wasn't a bad person. She wasn't a neglectful person, but she was a person in the middle of a terrible building with no money and too many kids. And so that was taking its toll. She had just had a baby that was just a few days old, and we took a look at it. In the report, it said that the baby appeared to be thin and weak. We took a look at the baby. We asked the mother to take the baby out of the crib that she had, and we looked at the baby, and we didn't look at the baby close enough. And I can tell you what we should have done, which is take the baby out of the blankets and gave it a thorough look and if we had any questions, take it to the emergency room to have people who are qualified make a decision about if the child was sick or not. Anyways, there was mice in the apartment. There was a lot of children. They were running everywhere, touching us and grabbing us, and there was a lot of distractions. We ended up leaving the family there, and writing on our report that somebody should follow up right away to check on the safety of all the children. The office that I worked on had a mandate to ensure the safety of children for a time period. So the infant survived our time period of responsibility, but died right after that and before the daytime office could follow up. And the cause of death was failure to thrive syndrome. Baby wasn't taking in nourishment. The baby was too thin, the baby was weak, and the baby died. And we were officially exonerated, but I did feel responsible personally for not taking action that night.
Tell us an example where you really did feel like a hero, where you felt confident that you'd saved a child's life and that the intervention was an important and good thing, an intervention that saved a life.
There was the first case that I write about happened shortly after I was hired, where two boys were left alone, left in their home alone. The case was called in by a child psychologist who was seeing the older of the two children, and she was concerned because when the children were left home alone, the older child became fearful and had in the past made overtures to try to kill his younger brother. And so she called the home, found out that they were left home alone, and gave us a call. So I called the home and talked to the child for a while, and he was a neat kid, and I just asked him point blank if he ever feels like he wants to hurt his younger brother, and he very honestly said, oh yes, absolutely. He said sometimes it was hard to resist his urge to kill his younger brother. And I talked to him about that a little bit, and it turns out that there was drug dealers in the hallways where the project that he lived in. And when he heard them in the hallways arguing or doing deals, he was afraid of them for good reason. And so if the younger brother would make noise, he was afraid that the drug dealers would come in and hurt he and his younger brother. So basically what ended up happening is in the course of a few moments, I was started out just having a conversation with a young child, and noises did start to come out of the hallway, and the boy did become afraid, and it very quickly the situation turned on its ear, and I was in a situation where I was talking to a boy who was holding a knife to the neck of his brother's throat. My supervisor called the police, and I had to keep him on the phone and try to keep him from cutting his brother's throat until the police came. And they did come, and he didn't cut his brother's throat. But I'm certain that he would have, because he had the knife on the little boy's neck, and the little boy was screaming. And he was I was talking him out of pushing the knife into the boy's neck. So that was an evening that, where I went to bed that night feeling like I had done a good job and that I'd prevented something terrible from happening.
My guest is Mark Parent. He's written a new memoir called Turning Stones. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Mark Parent. He spent 4 years as a caseworker with New York City's Emergency Children's Services, investigating allegations of child abuse and taking away endangered children from their parents. I'm wondering what it was like for you to work at night. You were often going into very unsafe housing projects in which there was a lot of gang activity and drug dealing, and unsafe places tend to be, I think, even more unsafe at night. And also, a lot of us just feel more vulnerable at night. It's dark. A lot of people are sleeping, and a lot of people who are awake are carrying out nefarious activities. And it's just the night just is eerier than the day. So what was it like for you to do this work at night?
One time it hit me really hard when I was in the middle of a bad case in the middle of the night, and I was working with detectives and police, and I was in a lobby of a project at about 4 a.m., and realizing that I was the only one of the large number of people standing around that wasn't carrying a gun, including probably most of the people that were just civilians in the hallways. Yeah, it was a very scary job. It was really my first real job, and so I didn't have anything to compare it to when I was thinking about what I was doing. But towards the end of my time there, I started to think, you know, there are people who go to work every day who aren't worried about getting a bullet in the chest, and I really had periods, and we all did, and the people who work there still do have periods of actually being afraid of being shot at or stabbed or attacked. And it's something you take for granted if you have a job where every day you don't have to face that kind of fear. That was a very real part of this job.
And you probably had no protection, no bulletproof vests, no guns?
Nope. No. At one point when I first joined, I was going to get a vest just because it seemed crazy to go out and take someone's kid away and then walk slowly away from the building. And even when you weren't taking a kid away, you were not a popular character walking away from there.
No, you're worse than the repo man. I mean, you're repossessing the kid.
Right. I mean, and that's as crazy as people get. I mean, I say in the book that taking someone's kid is a little easier than ripping their arms off, which is, I believe that. I wanted to get a bulletproof vest, but then everybody in the office didn't have one, and I don't know. I was 24 years old, so you live forever when you're 24.
Were you ever hurt or threatened?
I was threatened all the time. I was never hurt. If you were good, now I don't want to say that people that get hurt are not good, but I think that you can get yourself out of a lot of situations by being the bomb diffuser. I went out with people who were confrontational in their style, and they were at much greater risk of getting slapped around than I was. I respected people. I respected their homes. I respected the job that they did up to this point with their kids, and I was honest with them. And it was amazing how often I had situations where I was walking out of a home, taking somebody's child with them thanking me. And when that would happen, I would really say, wow, you know, this is incredible. And I knew that it was because of the care that I'd taken with the person and because, and not getting personal with them, but just saying just getting them to look at the situation and just respecting them.
What kind of person would thank you for taking away their child?
Somebody who's so caught up in the throes of drugs that they cannot keep their family running. I would take someone into their kitchen and ask them, how many kids do you have? And say they say four. And I'd say, then let's look in your refrigerator. And we open it up, and there's nothing in it. There's a bottle of juice. There's a half full box of cereal. I say, so how come there's no food here? Well, because that's a question they would not be able to answer. And say, how many other parents with four children have cupboards that look like this? These are people that are getting money, public assistance, and have food stamps and are using it for other purposes. And just being honest with someone and getting them to look at their situation, I would end up saying, listen, we're going to take your kids and you're going to get yourself together, hopefully, and do it for your children so that they can come back to you. But these people weren't idiots, and a lot of them could see that that of course their children were in danger. I would say, imagine if it wasn't your kids, but somebody else's kids. And say, yeah, I can see why you're here, and I can see why you're doing what you have to do.
Would it sometimes amaze you that a parent who had burned their child with cigarettes all over the child's body would still really want to keep the child? A parent that was willing to physically mutilate or destroy their child would be offended if you tried to take the child away and wanted the child to stay in the house.
Yeah, well, there were situations. There were situations where you had varying degrees of sympathy for a parent. And I had kids that I went to go see that had cigarette burns. And I've never seen a kid get burned with a cigarette. But if you can make yourself go to that place and imagine it, you get a lot of anger that wells up in you. And anger is a self-indulgent emotion that doesn't really do anything in the situation for the kid. So I try to go ahead and get angry when I'm home at night and not on the job. But I didn't have a lot of sympathy for those parents, and I would, so that was a different situation.
Would you wonder, though, why they still wanted the kid around? Why would they fight to keep the kid if what they wanted to do with the kid was hurt him more?
Yeah. Well, I mean, for a lot of these people, their kid is the only thing that they have, and the kid continues to love them through all of it, and they need to be loved, and they need to, they need all of the things that they get from their kids. The love, they need to dominate over someone. They need to, it's sick. It's a twisted psychology, and I didn't even care to go there. I didn't care. If there was a kid with cigarette burns, then I'd let everybody else go ahead and talk about the reasons and what's going on. I didn't care. I'm just going to take the kid out of there.
Did children ever say thank you? Or feel glad to be taken away from their parents, even when their parents were hurting them?
Yeah, very, very rarely I had children who were thankful, and it's really a sad thing if a child is thankful that you're pulling them away from their parents. So it was a strange mixture of emotion that you'd have with that. Mostly, even with severely abused kids, they were... they wanted to be with their parents. I mean, think about, everything that your parents do, you think that every other parent is doing. I mean, if you grow up in a house where everybody's, where mom and dad are walking around on their hands, then you just think that that's what people do. And so the things that these kids were subject to were not unusual. And there's, even in the worst situations, there's periods of joy and love and familiarity, and there's the siblings, and there's the four walls that you know, and the school you like to go to, and they lose all of that when they get removed.
Well, Mark Parent, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thanks, Terry.
Mark Parent's new memoir is called Turning Stones. This is Fresh Air.